Hello, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Listen as travel experts Chris Newton and Jerry Fuller give advice on world destinations and discuss important travel topics that are valuable to any world traveler. Go to www.traveladviceshow.com where you can listen to this show and all previous shows, or even ask your travel questions. Now here are your hosts, Chris and Jerry.
Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. Would you like to introduce our guest, Jerry, and our topic today?
Oh, I'd love to. We're really excited to have Rodney Smith, Vice President of Sunspots International Tours, calling back again and being our guest. He did our French Polynesia show, and we're going to be doing the other islands of the South Pacific. We've already had shows on Fiji and French Polynesia, I mentioned, but welcome. Rodney, we're really thrilled to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Chris and Jerry. Never had a shortage of something to say nice about the Pacific Islands.
I've been
over 20 years traveling down there, and I can't say enough about the culture, the people, and the overall experience. And so many people in the United States just don't even know is out there. So many people lump in, you know, a trip to the islands where they think it's so similar to maybe Hawaii or maybe a vacation they had last time they went to Mexico, that I think it's really hard for people to get a good grasp on how different of an experience it really is.
Can we go ahead and, as I mentioned, we've talked about French Polynesia and Fiji, but let's start with some of the islands. And let's start with maybe on the east side, I guess, on the Cook Islands, because the Cook Islands are like Hawaii maybe, what, 50, 80 years ago?
Yeah, it's kind of different. You know, probably the easiest way to describe the Cook Islands is you start off geographically. You know, the Hawaiian Islands are 20 degrees north of the equator. The Cook Islands are 20 degrees south. Same time zone, same day. So you're only 2 or 3 hours off of West Coast time, depending on what time of year you travel down there. So you're a little bit further south than Hawaii, of course. So you've got a little bit longer travel time. 475 miles to the east is the islands of Tahiti, and 1,800 miles to the west are the islands of Fiji. So you're right in the middle of that one corner of the Polynesian Triangle. So, you know, the destination is very unique in the Cook Islands simply because so many people, up until the late 1800s, the Cook Islands and Tahiti were all grouped together as the same group of islands. So it wasn't until the French established their protective sea rights over Tahiti that Britain actually received the 16 of the Cook Islands, and then in the 1930s, New Zealand actually took over the protectoracy rights, and then one of the islands actually seceded Niue and made its own country. So today there's 15 islands that make up the Cook Islands, and the hard part with trying to get a geographic feel about the Cook Islands is because they're these little tiny, tiny islands, and they're spread out over 2 million square kilometers of ocean. That's roughly the size of the United States. So
Wow. From
the southernmost of the islands to the northernmost of the islands is about a 7.5-hour flight. So they're little tiny islands, really, really spread out. Most of your vacation travel will start with the capital of Rarotonga, which is the main island of the Cook Islands, and it's a really unique island in the sense that it has a very similar sort of makeup to say Moorea, with that fringing barrier reef all the way around the island, but it's only 22 miles around and has a local population of just 8,000 people. So if you imagine going on vacation to a small country town in any of your states here in America, you know, I go and I do different presentations and talks, and I was in a town that had 10,000 people in it, and it was a very small rural town, and I was laughing with everybody. I'm saying, you know, imagine going all the way to the South Pacific and going to a town that, or an entire island that has 20% less people than your tiny little town here. And I think the biggest analogy that I like with the small town is that people refer to the Cook Islands as like a Mayberry by the sea. You know, it's this New Zealand influenced Polynesian culture. Everybody speaks English. You get a great exchange rate because of the New Zealand dollar. But because it's such a small country, they don't suffer from some of the larger city challenges. They don't have any homelessness. There's very, very little crime. There's almost no violent crime. So you have a very small town, rural community. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows who drives which car. You know, you're related. You know, the locals who live there, they're related to almost everybody on the island. And so it is a very different experience than, say, going to, you know, an anonymous island in Hawaii that has, you know, millions of people in it. The Cook Islands would be the polar opposite of that. They have a very small tourist base, and what I still like about it is that the Americans really haven't found the Cook Islands yet. We represent currently less than 3% of their overall visitor arrivals, so that's a very small percentage when you consider, you know, different destinations like Hawaii or Mexico and what a huge percentage of visitor arrivals we make up for those countries.
Can we talk a little bit, since you're over in the Rarotonga area, can you talk about the way you travel around that 22 miles and some of the meetings and the type of accommodations available?
Well, I think the best part about the destination is you can ever only be 11 miles away from anything unless you go the wrong way around the island. And I still have a customer who swears there's two airports on the island. He says, well, I pulled in to catch my flight, but I was at the international airport, so I took off driving until I came to the domestic airport, and then I stopped and I went inside. And he still to this day doesn't believe that he just went around the island 360 degrees and pulled back into the same parking lot and got on the same plane he was parked in front of before. So they have a really great bus system. So you've got an island-wide bus service that starts in the middle of town at Cook's Corner, and every hour on the hour, one bus takes off going clockwise around the island, and the other bus takes off anti-clockwise or counterclockwise around the island, and 30 minutes later, they meet on the opposite side of the island, and they keep continuing on until they meet back up again an hour later, back where they started again. So for about $8 U.S., you can get on and off the bus as many times as you'd like all day long, so it's very, very easy to get around the island. They do drive, of course, on the opposite side than our American roads, so it is a little bit of a challenge if you're going to rent a car or utilize one of their mopeds. We highly encourage you to rent a car, wrap a little bit more metal around you when you're out driving around, but it's really fun to be able to rent an air-conditioned car, drive around the island, and for about $35 a day, so it's still pretty affordable to utilize the rental car services there. Mm-hmm. You know, it is also a little bit different because they still don't have any private beaches in the Cook Islands, so when you travel around that road system, that road primarily goes right along the beachfront or very close to the beachfront. So as you travel around, if you see a beautiful beach or if you would like to take your snorkeling gear and your picnic lunch and just stop someplace that you see secluded and literally walk out to the beach, there is no laws that you can't be there or anything like that. And typically what you'll find is it's very easy to find a spot that's still empty. So much different than Waikiki.
And about the hotel, the different kind of accommodations?
Yeah, probably the biggest difference is that a lot of people will refer to the Cook Islands as like a blue-collar Tahiti. So while in Tahiti, it's very easy to spend up to $7,000 a night on hotel accommodation at, say, the St. Regis. You know, they have different suites that go for right around $7,000 a night. The most expensive room that you can rent a night in the Cook Islands is right around $800 a night. So, and most of the accommodation lies from about $250 to $400 a night. So they definitely have a real broad palette of bungalow-style accommodation right on the beachfront with that unique individual bungalow experience. You know, so much of what the Cook Island experience is about is that proximity to the lagoon, the proximity to the beach. And so what a lot of the properties are absolute beachfront. You'll walk directly out of your individual little bungalow, two steps down onto the sand, straight across the sand into the beautiful lagoon. There's a fringing barrier reef system that surrounds the entire island. At its furthest point, it's about a mile out from the beach to the barrier reef. And inside that reef system is a calm, clear, crystalline blue water lagoon. Over 150 species of tropical fish and over 70 species of live corals. And so with that being directly outside your door, A snorkeling tour isn't going to the lobby of a hotel, getting on a bus, stopping at four other properties, and then driving out to a bay to go snorkel. You'll go and grab your mask and fins right out of your room, walk straight out of your room, 25 steps across the sand, and be literally in a huge aquarium right in front of your room. That activity is one that's so popular, and why the accommodation really gravitates towards the beachfront locations is because of that. It's such a great natural asset. Because of that fringing barrier reef, you don't have any undertows. You don't have any riptides. You don't have any waves of any kind inside the lagoon. So you've got this really calm, clear water. So those that aren't very strong swimmers, people that aren't really comfortable snorkeling out in the open ocean with sharks and whatever else is out there that can eat you, the great part about the Cook Islands is inside that reef system, there it's very, very safe. There are no sharks inside the reef in the Cook Islands. And so when you're out there, you can be 4 feet deep in water, get a little water in your mask, stand up, empty it out, flop back over, and take off paddling around the lagoon again. So that is a really, really great popular feature with the island and how it's made up. And because of the proximity with a lot of the accommodation, they make it very easy for you to utilize that, not just with snorkeling, but a lot of your beachfront accommodation provides all non-motorized water sports complimentary. So they'll have outrigger canoes, sea kayaks, a lot of snorkeling gear, all for your guest use, all free of charge. So that makes it a really nice experience as well.
So one of the neat things about Cook Islands, I think, you mentioned about how big it is as far as kilometers, but there are some smaller islands, and if people think 8,000 is a small island, but there are some islands that are really phenomenal. Do you want to talk about maybe one or two of the more interesting ones, like Aitutaki?
I always find that people, you know, they come to Rarotonga, and it's almost comedic. They think, gosh, you know, there's less than 2,500 hotel rooms in the entire island. And they think of, you know, that small population base as, you know, being so small. And they, you know, the Rarotonga is such a laid-back environment. And then they go to Aitutaki, where you have an island that's only 7 miles around and only 1,300 locals. My wife and I honeymooned in Aitutaki, and at day three when we walked to town, she looked at me and she says, "I've met everyone." We've right. been here for 3 days, and everybody I've seen in the walk that drove by on a car, on a moped, we've met in 3 days here. So it is a very, very relaxed, remote environment, so much so that it played for an incredible locale for a recent Survivor television show. Was filmed up in Aitutaki Lagoon, and they chartered out five of the remote islands inside the lagoon, and they filmed the Survivor reality show out there, I think, 2 episodes ago. So it was a very scenic locale. The biggest challenge that the crew and cast had with filming in the Cook Islands and Aitutaki specifically was making it look bad or ominous in any way. It was really funny because it was such a unique Survivor program, because nobody lost any weight. There's so much, there's just so many fish in a lagoon, things to eat within the lagoon, that the castaways were the best fed out of any of the television programs they'd filmed to date. And so with the coconut trees and fresh fruit that was located on the different islands and all of the sea life inside the lagoon, it was really hard making that place look ominous. So much so that it's probably one of the real favored getaways for a lot of our customers these days is to spend 3 or 4 days out in Aitutaki. And so to be able to take just a short 45-minute flight on a 32-seat turbojet prop Bandurandy aircraft, or actually an A340-300 aircraft is now servicing the Aitutaki. So you actually have a pressurized cabin. It's a beautiful service now with the new Saab plane. So it's a beautiful aircraft. The probably the biggest difference too when you get to Aitutaki is that number of rooms. You're now down to only about 85 rooms on the entire island, and a lot of those making up very, very small boutique style properties. So the Pacific Resort Aitutaki is now known as not only one of the best resorts in the entire South Pacific, but probably one of the best value for money resorts anywhere in the world. It is an incredible location, purpose-built and designed to be a solid 4.5-star luxury property in an incredible locale with a culture that's second to none. The Cook Islanders as a whole, you know, the destination, because of its beautiful blue waters, its snorkeling, its long, long white sand beaches, so many people associate Tahiti with long beaches, and it's, unfortunately, they get there, and they're sometimes very surprised at how short some of the beaches are with the majority of the tourist destinations. Whereas in the Cook Islands, people are typically very surprised at how long and wide they can go and walk for literally hours in either direction out from their hotel and be on these beautiful, pristine white sand beaches. With having so few visitors there as well, those beaches do actually have seashells and bits of coral and an opportunity to mix with the locals that live on the waterfront and provides for a really neat experience. I still have people come back and comment about how nice the hotels were, how beautiful the lagoons were, but still the number one comment we get back from the destination is still based off of the people. It really is the people that make up this destination and really turn it into something special. The genuine Polynesian hospitality that's still so very much intact today in the Cook Islands is truly unique. Where tipping is contrary to their culture, you're going to find that when people are nice to you in the Cook Islands, they're nice to you because that's the way they are, as opposed to having a handout or looking for something in return. You know, some people equate the Polynesians and the Cook Islands with some of the worst salespeople in the world because when you go to town and visit the Punongonui marketplace, the open-air market, and travel around, they're more interested in catching up and gossiping with their neighbors than chasing around the visitors trying to get some dollars away from them. So it is still, it's hard to really put into words, but so much of what you come away with from a vacation down in the Cooks is a feeling of making friends or finding some place that's still been relatively untouched by time. You think of any destination in the world that you can come to mind quickly that doesn't have a Starbucks, that has no Pizza Hut, has no chain hotel of any kind. There's no Hiltons, no Marriotts, no Radissons. This is still a destination that doesn't have a McDonald's. You can actually go and get away to a country that has one television station, three radio stations. They're up to two stations now on FM and one on AM, so they're really getting big time. They still don't have a traffic light in the country. No escalators and no elevators in the country. So, you know, it is still a very unique experience to be able to step back in time. You know, Jerry, when you mentioned that it was Hawaii 50 or 80 years ago, when you get off the plane, there's only one plane. They have an airport that's so small. You have one runway, you pull up and you have one place to park and you get off and you're the only aircraft there. They only have one baggage carousel. And when you walk out, they have this very complex system of how to find your transportation on the ground. They have a very large Polynesian lady, about 250 pounds, in a bright colored muumuu, who asks you, where are you staying? And you tell her, and then she points to the person who's there to pick you up, because she knows everybody on the island and knows who's there to pick up whom. And it's a very different experience, very similar to what made Hawaii so unique 50 years ago, was that true, genuine Polynesian hospitality, that extended family community. You know, so many people aren't ready for how remote or laid back the Cook Islands are. This is still a country that closes on Sunday. And we think of that here as being, wow, what do you mean it closes on Sunday? You know, there's 24-hour banking and internet. You know, where can't you buy whatever you would like, almost 24 hours a day? In the Cook Islands, that's their day off. The local banks aren't open. None of the local town shops are open. Most of the restaurants don't open till after 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That's their day off for family time and barbecues. They invite you to participate in local church services. They're very anxious to have you come and join them. It is kind of funny because most of their church services are in their local Cook Island Maori language. So you go there and you listen to them sing and you listen to the service and you understand very little of it. But it is still just that. You sit in a pew in a church that was built in the late 1800s by missionaries. And very little has changed with that service. The locals, as their way of showing appreciation to the church service, they get dressed up in their most beautiful white dresses. They also don their most fabulous handmade, hand-woven straw hats, the Rito hats, And that's their way of competing with their neighbors, is who can weave the nicest hat, and they turn up to church with the most elaborate hat designs and beautiful outfits with fresh flora hanging off of their necks. And it is a really beautiful experience. Part of how I've been able and fortunate enough to have traveled down there for so many years is I take groups of travel agents down and show them the destination so that they can come back and share it with their customers. With my last travel agent group, we had 9 of our travel agents went to church on Sunday morning, and only 2 of them came home. 7 of them went home with other families that they met at church and had barbecues in their backyards. And at 7 o'clock at night, I'm seeing my travel agents come piling out of the back of pickup trucks with flowers in their hair, waving goodbye to their new friends that they made at church. And that really still is how it is down there. Is you go there and you immerse yourself in the local culture, and people want to know where you're from. They want to know what it's like, and it is still a very unique environment.
Well, let's talk a minute. Let's go west a little bit, down to Samoa, or over to Samoa. Would you like to tell us about the two Samoas for a little bit?
I tell you what, that is probably the most underrated destinations in the South Pacific that people know very, very little about. Typically, if somebody's heard of Samoa, they met somebody from there once. Oh, we have a Samoan that I used to work with, and he was the nicest guy, but man, he was huge. He was 350 pounds. And so not only do they have these beautiful islands, they grow some of the biggest Polynesians in Samoa. 19 years ago, I went to Samoa for my very first time. And I can remember being a very young man, getting in and arriving there at the airport and seeing a few suitcases coming down the baggage carousel, but more importantly, all of these big boxes and these huge bags all wrapped in duct tape, and there was canned food spilling out of some of them. And everybody who was on the plane were Samoans that were coming back home, except for my father and I. And so we had the suitcases, and we walked out the door, and just like in the Cook Islands, it was very easy to spot who the tourists were. So we got approached by this lady, and she says, oh, your ride's just over here. I says, but you don't even know our name. And she says, you're the only people who got off the plane that I don't know, so that's got to be you. So it was very interesting, because when you fly into Apia, into Western, what was referred to as Western Samoa at the time, you were about 45 minutes from downtown Apia. And so you would get on a transport, and at the time you would arrive at about 2:30 in the morning. As we drove down the road at 2:30 in the morning, the first glaring thing that I was just so dumbfounded was the Fale-style accommodation that the local Samoans lived in, which is basically they have a roof and posts holding up the roof and a concrete floor and no walls. So you're driving down the road, and there's people lifting their head up out of bed, waving at us as we're driving down the road from their bed. And I'm pointing and looking, they're in there. You can see people watching TV, and they'd lift their head up and wave at the bus as it went by. And I was in absolute shock that there were people still in the 1980s that were living in homes that had no walls. And because of the storms they get through during cyclone season and the heavy winds and the really warm temperate climate they have year round, there's just no real need for it. The walls are actually a big hindrance. So it is a very unique atmosphere still today, right from when you arrive to the airport. And while they have probably one of the grandest hotels in the South Pacific, one of the leading South Pacific tourism destinations is Aggie Gray's. Fred Gray, Aggie's grandson, still there running the property today. And has now built an additional resort out by the airport on one of Upolu's nicest beaches. And so there is, you can literally step back in time and see what visitors saw on a trip to Samoa, back in the days when you had famous writers, when you had missionaries traveling there. It was all a very unique time 50 years ago in the Pacific, and Aggie Gray's Hotel really started the tourism industry as a whole. One of the things with Samoa is it's still even a little bit more of a step back in time than even the Cook Islands. You're going to find a little bit less infrastructure for mainstream tourism. A lot of their accommodation is going to be of small boutique style, like Coconuts Beach Club. You've got Sinalai Reef Resort. And the new Aggie Gray's property, Beach Resort, are all very fabulous options with very first world accommodation and amenities and facilities. And you're only about 200 yards away from Samoa, the real Samoa. You walk out the gate of one of those hotels and start talking with people and visiting with them. It's a very interesting environment. They too suffer very, very little crime. They have village chiefs. The village chiefs basically dictate, you know, what religion you worship, who gets a new roof. There's still a very communal, a very tribe or village sort of atmosphere. And he rules the village and everybody pools their money. And when somebody needs something or somebody's going to go off to university, he doles out the money and who gets paid what to whom. And it's still a very unique environment. Having that location, they're just 12 degrees south of the equator, so it's a very, very warm environment. And with the islands of Upolu, right next door is the second largest island of Savai, and there is a ferry that goes in between the two, and there's also now daily small fixed-wing aircraft flights in between the two islands as well. The really neat part of that going to Samoa is you can stay in a very traditional resort, and on a recent fan trip when I had some travel agents with me to get them familiar with the property and products. When we went out to Savai, we kept driving by these incredible beaches, and out on those beaches were a little miniature version of their Fale houses. You had a floor of wood floor. It was elevated about 3 feet off the ground on posts. You had 8 or 10 posts going up to a thatched roof, and then inside you had a mattress on the wood floor, and you had a mosquito net and open-air walls. There was no walls. And those little Fales, those little thatched roof huts, were available for rent for $46 a night, and that included two meals. You got breakfast and dinner daily and this Fale to sleep in. And we got there, and all my travel agents says, we don't want to stay in the hotel. We want to go stay in one of these. And so we did a few little negotiations, and sure enough, we got the group out there, and we slept underneath the stars. And it was really interesting, the comments that the agents had. They says, we can stay in hotels any place in the world. Where else can you go and stay in an open-air thatch, you know, little Fale right on a beach with the stars out and the moon and the sea breeze, and it was a real highlight of their trip, one of the most least expensive styles of accommodation that they have there. Samoa is very easy to travel around because everybody speaks English. It's a very good exchange rate against the U.S. dollar, and you do have nonstop air service there weekly on Air New Zealand, as well as one-stop air service via Fiji with Air Pacific. So you have first world air carriers flying in there, and a very nice experience in getting there. And when you arrive, you definitely feel like you're not quite at the end of the world, but you can see it from there. Samoa and the Polynesian culture is still so surface level in Samoa. It's not something you ever feel like is put on. No. When they say talofa, when they're giving you their best, it's not fake. It's all real. Right. It's real from every person you talk to in the resort, you know, about the tattoos that they have and why they have them, to where they live, why they don't wear shoes. You know, they're quite happy to share this. The funniest comment that people have is, well, you know, you live in homes with no walls, you know, how do you make babies, you know? So, oh, you know, they've got a whole story about, oh, you just go off in the bushes. It's a very unique place, and you come away feeling like you haven't been, you know, idealized as a tourist, but you've left as somebody's friend. You know, they thank you for choosing their little slice of heaven. You know, they live in an environment, homes with no walls, and they don't envy us. They don't think, gosh, I really wish I had an American home and American car. They think we have it bad. They see us come down there and we're all stressed out, and you know, they say, oh, we wouldn't want that. You know, down here we have everything we possibly want in this very relaxed way of life. They don't have a word in the Samoan language for ulcer. or stress. They don't suffer from those things down there. It's a very different environment.
Well, I noticed everything that you talked about on Samoa is the Western Samoan, and that's my favorite part. I mean, would you recommend, in two words or less, anyone going to American Samoa?
Never.
But that's my word is never.
American.
One day.
Yeah, if you if
one day and sit and leave.
Exactly. If you ever want to see where maybe we're not as proud of America's influence on a country, American Samoa is probably there. We have a pretty big presence in, and it was more of a strategic presence, of course, during World War II, and importance being literally halfway across the Pacific. It was an ideal place to have a protectorate and an influence in the American Samoa's government. The local town of Pangopango is a thriving metropolis, but it's the majority of the industry. The majority of the industry there is tuna processing. So if you eat tuna in a can, most of it comes through Pangopango and American Samoa. The hard part is that with that American influence, we've taken away a lot of that culture. We've added a lot of things to their Polynesian way of life, like welfare, like 100% paid for medical care. They're 50% of the employed people in American Samoa live in Western Samoa, but because the people in Western Samoa can get welfare and free medical care, there's no real reason for them to work, so people from Western Samoa who really need jobs and want to work can come across and go there. It's a very tropical environment, but probably it's the least attractive of a tourist-style destination in the Pacific Islands.
Let's spend just a few minutes on, let's go a little bit south, down to Tonga. Who would you send to Tonga? Who would you recommend to go to Tonga?
Wow, the modern adventurer. You know, I think if somebody who's enjoyed a trip to Ecuador or Costa Rica, somebody who enjoys, I think of some of the activities they have in Samoa now, bare boat cruising through the northern group of islands up in Vavao, being able to go and rent a crude yacht, a 52-foot sailing yacht with a skipper and a cook and five of your closest friends or three couples, and to go up and sail through the 74 islands of Vavao. Able to go out and see kayaks in Hapai, in the middle group of islands, in the Hapai group, and to be able to go out and sea kayak amongst Samoan humpback whales, to be able to go out sea kayak and snorkel with those same whales. This is one of the only places in the world you can do that and do it on a basis where they're seeing 98% of their sea kayaking trips see multiple whales every day. And so some of those sort of experiences, you know, are right out of the pages of National Geographic, but same thing, in a very first world Polynesian-friendly environment. It's because of their lack of population and abundance of islands, they have an incredible setting for pristine beaches, incredible water. It's one of the only places in the world where they say big game fish die of old age because there aren't enough people there to fish for them. It is an incredible experience because you still have small private island resorts to stay on, like Royal Sunset Island Resort. You've got little beachfront locations that have these little bungalows on these remote islands like the Tongan Beach Resort. There's a much different makeup or the lay of the land. When you fly from Tonga, you connect on Air New Zealand via Western Samoa, via Apia. So you fly LA Apia, Apia into Nuku'alofa. Nuku'alofa is a very unique island in the South Pacific. Bora Bora, Moorea, Papeete, the Cook Islands, most of Rarotonga, are all rugged mountainous interiors of their islands. We call Tonga the pancake of the Pacific because this island is, you know, almost 40 miles around, but at the highest point it's only 300 meters above the water. So it's a really big flat island. There is not that big rugged mountainous interior.
I think people need to be really aware that it's because of the flatness of it, it's kind of, I don't want to say ugly because that's not the word to use, but it doesn't look as Polynesian as what you might think it should.
No, because you can rarely see past the trees that are around you. There is no, you know, one of the things that I always encourage people to do in like the Cook Islands is to go to game fishing for a day, because you only ever fish a quarter mile out off the reef, and so you have this beautiful view back of this rugged mountain and all of the beaches and the lagoon and all of the palm trees, and so it's a really neat locale. In Tonga, when you get offshore, you typically can only see the first row of trees, and there's nothing behind that. And so it's maybe not as dramatic in that sort of sense. What Tonga lacks in a rugged mountainous interior, it makes up for with a kingdom. Literally, up until just a year ago, they had a king that ruled Tonga with a very unique fashion for many, many years. And so that being the last real kingdom or that king hierarchy in the Pacific Islands, it was very unique. It wasn't a joke. They had a king and he ruled. We do what he says. He divvies out who gets taxed for what and where their tourism dollars went. He had an input on everything. Tonga was famous about 15 years ago because they tried to sell the outer space above the king, above the kingdom of Tonga, for somebody to put a satellite there so that you could communicate in between the United States and Australia and New Zealand. And so they were trying to sell people outer space above Tonga so that they could put in satellites.
We want to thank you so very, very much.
No problem.
You talked about some of the most fabulous islands. And as you mentioned, when people go to the Cook Islands and Samoa and Tonga, they're stunned at how, I don't want to say how primitive they are, because they're not, but they're really fabulous, and you've summed us up magnificently well. We thank you so very, very much.
Thanks for your time today, Chris and Jerry, and keep in mind, these places are down there and they're waiting for you. You just have to get off the beaten track just a little bit, and man, you sure find something special.
That's how I contact you.
We have a website at www.sunspotsintl.com, or we can also be reached at 800-334-5623.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to listen to other great travel advice shows with Chris and Jerry at www.traveladviceshow.com.